three passages by Sven Burkertz. Modern living finds us enmeshed in systems that we think we require, that require us, from which it is every day more difficult to extricate ourselves. These systems all share a common digitally premised structure. They proliferate by way of digits and codes. They interlock. At no point do they simplify or clarify or bring us closer to our embodied physical reality. Their synaptic, almost neural machinery advances by the constant creation and dissemination of data. And the process is continually accelerating. Most recently, for instance, we have found ourselves in transition from the wire-bound electrical impulse, itself a kind of sorcery, but still physically traceable, to what we now experience as essentially invisible, wireless networks. The speed, volume, and presence of information are intensified, even as our awareness of its originating context fades further. The stuff is just there, all around us. Information and data are no longer felt to be vast accumulation of discrete items, but comprise instead an enveloping environment. Background and foreground have shifted almost without our noticing. Even a few decades ago, these signals moved to us in ways we essentially understood. Now, we move through their midst. The midst already feels like a given. When I enter the network, I feel there is something different in my peripheral vision, maybe in my life itself. Focused though I am on a single communication, I am also distractingly aware of the perpetual possibility of other communications. The portal to the whole world is theoretically opened. This is one of the features of being inside a network mesh, incessant peripherality. An awareness of the larger world at every moment a click away. And because of this, I occupy a different gravity field. I'm lighter, more porous. The difference between old and new modes is not purely imaginary. The writing of the paper letter presumes the fact of physical transmission, real time, real space, and literal, tangible message. The subliminal continuity corroborates my sense of being in the world. Just as writing and receiving email puts me inside a kind of parenthesis at a level of remove. This dilution is what inevitably happens when the attention is distributed or fragmented. After all, an experience, an encounter, is only ever as intense, as real, as our ability to respond to it. It is always less about the event than about the perception of the event. We are all capable of complete engagement on one end of the spectrum, and scattered distractedness on the other. Each of our various devices creates its own divisive distractions, and these can be so potent as to affect us even when it's others who are using them, an indication of the reach and nature of their influence. To be sitting on a bench next to two people who are conversing is very different from sitting next to a person who is talking on a cell phone. The technology stains the moment with its disconcerted transmission of elsewhere, removing the talker from the realm of closed-off, immediate presence, affecting the whole environment. My awareness of unknown possibility, of elsewhere, intrudes, just as it does when I am sending and receiving emails. All such insertions, public laptop users have the same effect, alter my perception of the moment. Leave it in some subtle way untethered, pending, and without full connection. I register that something deep in the human ecology has been disturbed. The immediate present is undermined, perforated by a sense of elsewhere. I feel a bit as I do when I address my words to someone who is not looking at me. More and more, I believe that art, via imagination, is the necessary counter to our information glut crisis. Imagination is a formative, inward power, independent and generative. Information, by contrast, imparts inner form from the outside. To be informed is to receive the print of ideas or impressions. Imagination creates shape. Information imposes shape. The former is the energy of self, the latter, the energy of the world. The health of the dynamic between self and world has everything to do with the vitality of the self in the world, and it clarifies the place of art. Art, encountered in the right way, attentively, great art, ambitious, realized art, not only lifts us to its level, but also gives us energy in the form of attention. It offers an inward integrity to help counter the dissipating force of signals, endless distractions of data. It arms us, if only for a time, against the depletion that threatens on every front. But more than a refuge or a sanctuary, it is also an inoculation. It is a preemptive engagement undertaken on behalf of the individual, and it keeps the ideal of individuation, so threatened, still viable. There is a profound struggle going on between the needs of the private self and the collective momentum towards some new totality. We feel it as anxiety, as self-detachment, as a sense of incompleteness, a private distress to which we respond, if we do at all, by turning to therapy, to prescriptions, to meditation and endorphin-releasing exertions. Indeed, our culture seems to be on every front at war with anxiety and unease. And it might get a good deal worse before it gets better, if it can get better at all. For the systems will only grow and proliferate, destroying old contexts, offering only the temptation of the latest techno-panaceas. I do worry about these things, but I have not given up hope. The roots of the eye run deep. They will not be eradicated or even numbed that easily. Caught in the torque, once we're aware of being caught, we have some choice. And if it is our intimate self-awareness, our existential uniqueness we would safeguard or seek to recover, then we might make ourselves turn from the full embrace of our networks and reconnect to the one-on-one circuitry of art. Art serves the soul, not least by demanding and creating attention. This same attention, in its early stages, allows us to winnow the meaningful signal from the distracting noise, and ultimately, rejuvenates the connection of the self to the world.